the MMQB, brought to you by FanDuel. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code MMQB at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. And we're also sponsored by the SeatGeek app, which is the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. You can download the app and enter our promo code, coincidentally also MMQB, for $20 off of your first tickets. Can you imagine getting shot and then coming back to the NFL as a mediocre aging running back?
I can't imagine any part of that sentence. I can't imagine getting shot. I can't imagine being in the NFL. I can't certainly imagine being mediocre at anything. So it's. I bet Philip Rivers has to pack more kids to his move than you did suitcases. How many suitcases did you move with you?
Two.
Yeah. Philip Rivers has like, what, seven kids? Maybe eight or nine by the time we're done with this podcast.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB podcast with my dear friend and colleague Andy Benoit of the MMQB, Peter King's football boutique website at Sports Illustrated. I am a fellow writer there, Robert Klimko, and this is our weekly podcast. We're pumped for the NFL season. We're three short weeks away. Three critical preseason games for all these teams, though Andy may disagree. I know our listeners are pumped too. Please tweet us at the MMQB or at Robert Klimko or at Andy Benoit. We love to hear from you, and we're very happy to be a part of the Panoply network of SI podcasts. So today we're going to talk a little bit about the news of the day. Kelvin Benjamin, who unfortunately tore his ACL, I did see him in camp and was very impressed by him. So that's terrible. Philip Rivers, new deal. We're going to talk a little bit about my visit to Chiefs camp and RG3's big quote of the week. Andy, start us off. What's the first topic you want to hit?
Well, we have to hit the Benjamin topic. It's the most relevant. It's the most recent. I think it's the most damning news we've heard in this entire preseason so far. This is, you know, maybe the Arian Foster injury is just as big, although Foster might come back midway through the season. Benjamin's done for the year, and I think with him goes Carolina's passing game. And I hate to make those broad statements like that, but this was a team already hurting at wide receiver. We can get into why. Stylistically, they absolutely need this guy in their passing game.
I'll take you one step further. I'll raise you and say that their playoff hopes are over. I posed this on Twitter earlier. I don't think there are more than two or three other wide receivers in the NFL who were more critical entering this season to their team's playoff hopes. You could argue Calvin Johnson in Detroit, Julio Jones in Atlanta, and then my number three would be Kelvin Benjamin in Carolina, just because he has developed into a number one wide receiver in my mind from what I saw last year and what I saw early in camp. I mean, I cannot stress to you enough how impressive he was athletically in practice when we were down in Spartanburg during week one. And it's a humongous drop-off after him. I mean, Jericho Cotri is your number two, a guy who has played very little wide receiver in college. Rookie Devin Funchess is your number three or number two, however you want to look at it. And now those guys, who are far cries from number one wide receivers, are now Cam Newton's big weapons. And that offense was hurting in the first place, especially on the offensive line at left tackle with Michael Oher starting there. And now Cam loses what has become his biggest safety valve.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you about the value of Benjamin. I think as when we talk about value, we're talking about value to his team and why he was so big in Carolina's passing game. This is not a precision-based passing game. Cam Newton is not an anticipation passer. It's not built around a lot of timing and rhythm. The reason they go out and they draft Devin Funchess, the reason they drafted Benjamin last year, these are wide-radius targets, big targets, guys that can win on possession catches, and that accommodates Cam Newton, who is not the most consistently accurate passer. So they have a certain way they want to play in Carolina. They're a run-based offense that want to win. They want to win on jump balls on the perimeter with their big receivers. Now you've eliminated the proven one from that equation, and one who I thought had a. I don't know what he did this offseason, but I thought there was a significant need for improvement by Benjamin as a route runner in a precision area of the game, as being a professional, being honing the craft, so to speak. And I was eager to see where he came out on that, and now he's going to lose a year in his development. So that's a setback in the big picture. But little picture, the number one receiver's down. You listed all the guys they have. I mean, there's nobody there you're building an entire route combination around. So they're going to have to scheme their way through this. And by the way, I know they have Ted Ginn, but by the way, they don't have a lot of speed in this receiving core. And that's a problem. Because if you don't have a lot of speed and you're a run-based offense, they're going to be looking at eight-man boxes, a lot of guys sitting on routes. This is going to be a tough year for Carolina. I don't see a way around this one.
And I think that they were probably looking at eight-man boxes before this.
Yes.
For the most part, just because Ted Ginn really hasn't shown over the course of his career that he can be a regular contributor on offense.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, Ted Ginn's a guy you throw in. I acknowledge him because I know if I say there's no speed in Carolina's offense, people tweeted us, well, what about Ted Ginn? We acknowledge that he has straight line speed. Philly Brown might have some speed, but the point is there's nobody taking the top off of the defense for Carolina's receiving game. And that was also true with Benjamin, by the way. He's not a burner either, but he can win in other ways, and he can still win contested balls, jump balls against double coverage or what have you. And so now the speed element wasn't as big a deal with him in the perimeter. He's not there now, and now your lack of speed gets magnified. So they're getting hit in multiple directions here.
It's going to be a boring offense to watch, and thankfully...
Unless you're a fan of running games, multi-dimensional running games.
Right. Fortunately for them, I mean, they've got one of the better defenses in the NFL, so they can stay competitive, but in the NFC South, I don't really give them a shot anymore.
Do you think that still is one of the better defenses? See, I think obviously the linebacking core is very good. The secondary, I think most would agree, is below average, but you don't need a very good one in that kind of scheme they run. They run a very vanilla scheme, so you don't need to invest heavily in corners and safeties. But you need a pass rush, and we've talked about the value of Greg Hardy to them before. They haven't replaced Greg Hardy. They added nobody to this pass rush. Basically, the Panthers are a more extreme and therefore, I know this sounds weird, but therefore a lesser version of what they were a year ago. They're the same thing, just more committed to it with less weapons.
The only thing that I would disagree with you on is I think that there are some emerging pieces on that defense. I think Kawan Short in more of a full-time role can have a big year. And I also think that Roman Harper and Charles Tillman could potentially, either one or the other, provide some kind of relief for that secondary, which you mentioned isn't a strong point of the team.
Well, but Clemco, come on, what year is this? 2010, 2011?
Yes.
No, I agree with you about Kawan Short. I thought he looked good early in the season. He didn't show up in my film notes a whole lot in the second half of the season. They need Star Lotulelei to bounce back too, because he regressed in year two, which, it happens with guys. But, that's a lot of Panther talk for now. Newton got a big contract. I know we're going to talk about those other QBs with big contracts, right?
Right. We wanted to get to Philip Rivers, the other big news from the weekend. Signs a four-year, $83.2 million extension with $65 million guaranteed. It has a no-trade clause, which essentially ensures that he will retire either a San Diego Charger or a Los Angeles Charger, which would be fun. I mean, I want a team in L.A. I'm tired of talking about it.
Well, I don't know if Philip Rivers quite felt the same way as you did, but there's a lot of factors that go into it. And one way or the other, he was going to have to uproot his family from San Diego, his considerably large family, most likely after this season. So, the L.A. transition, maybe it's not as big a deal as moving to where, I don't know, where else would he have gone after this year?
Cry me a river. I had to move to Chicago for this job from Maryland.
And how many kids did you take with you, Robert?
Okay, so Philip Rivers, before he...
How many suitcases did you... I bet Philip Rivers has to pack more kids to his move than you did suitcases. How many suitcases did you move with you?
Two.
Yeah. Philip Rivers has, like, what, seven kids? Maybe eight or nine by the time we're done with this podcast? Cry me a river. Oh, jeez. So, would you pay Rivers as much money as they paid him, and then would you put Eli Manning on that same plane? That's what we're getting to here, right?
What is Rivers' average with that deal? It doesn't top Aaron Rodgers, correct?
I'd have to. I mean, 4 years, 83. Not quite. No, it doesn't. But you look at the $65 million guaranteed.
Yeah, I would say I would put Eli somewhere between what Russell Wilson and Philip Rivers got and what Aaron got. The thing is, Aaron signed his extension to become the highest paid in 2013 when the cap was 123 million, and the cap's going to be 150 million for 2016. So I would have no problem with Eli temporarily besting what Aaron got when the cap was more than 25 million below what it will be next year.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's the way you have to look at these things. It's the percentage of cap space that what is what really matters, not the salary. I know it matters to the guys, the salary, the dollars matter, but from a comparison perspective, from the way teams look at this, it's the percent of cap space that's being used up. You know how I feel about these quarterback contracts, though, Robert. I think whoever signs it latest is near the top of the market because it's such a rare position. That's just what it costs. That's the going rate of a quality starting NFL quarterback.
Yeah. So I wanted to get into and get your thoughts on the comparison between pre-coach Mike McCoy, Philip Rivers, and Philip Rivers with Mike McCoy. And of course, McCoy showed up in 2013. From 2006 to 2012, he completed 63.7% of his passes, about 3,900 yards a year, 27 touchdowns, and 13 interceptions. In the 2 seasons he's had Mike, 68% completion percentage, over 4,300 yards passing average, 32 touchdowns, and 14 interceptions per year. What in your mind, and I wrote about this last year, so I have a couple thoughts on it, but what in your mind has been the biggest difference about Philip Rivers and the way he produces with Mike McCoy?
Well, remember when McCoy first got Rivers, he said that he thinks his QB would have a 70% completion rate. And everybody kind of laughed at him at first. This was in spring camp, they hadn't been together but more than a few weeks. And McCoy wasn't far off on that. It's an offense that gets the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly. And let's think about what happens when the quarterback throws the ball quickly. What must go into that? Because it's not as simple as just dropping back and, hey, throw the ball, Philip. You have to be able to diagnose the defense before the snap. If you're throwing the ball off a three-step drop back, chances are you knew either A or B, one of those two options, where you were going with the ball before you got the snap. Rivers has always been very good in the pre-snap phase. And as quarterbacks get older, they just get better at this naturally because there's only so many things the defense can show them over the course of a career. So the offense, in that sense, naturally plays to Rivers' strength, which is controlling the game at the line of scrimmage. He is an accurate passer. I know he has a funny-looking release, but the more I think about it, the more I think that helps him because he's a guy who doesn't need a ton of space around him in order to throw, which is why he can also push the ball downfield. And that precision accuracy mixed with that lack of need for space to throw, that's where it gets you the run after catch yards. That's what gets your receivers in the best position to succeed. And that's why his passing yards have gone up by about 400 a year under Mike McCoy.
The interesting thing that I learned about Rivers, and I hear from time to time around various teams in the NFL, is that he will run the Friday protection meeting, the blitz meeting with the offensive line. No coaches present, all the backup quarterbacks and all the offensive linemen and Phil. And I guess my question to you is, because you talk to more of these coaches about the day-to-day stuff than I do, how many quarterbacks in the NFL are running their own protection meetings?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have an exact answer, but the guys that would be in that group would be your Bradys and your Mannings and whoever. We're talking, I mean, the not just the elite guys, but the elite intellectual quarterbacks. And Rivers, but around the league, has always, without question, been lumped into that category of players in terms of intelligence, leadership, all that kind of stuff. And when you have a guy that takes that kind of command of the protections, it puts less burden on your offensive line. The Chargers don't need to. Offensive linemen are too expensive. That's the first thing. And the Chargers don't need to play that game as much because they have this three-step timing offense and they have a quarterback who takes ownership of the line and knows how to command the huddle and command the line of scrimmage and make adjustments when there's protection mistakes around them. So when you're San Diego, you can re-sign a King Dunlap, who's an average left tackle. And I mean that, you know, it's a nice way. He's a fine NFL left tackle. You can sign King Dunlap. You can start a third-round player at your center position in Chris Watt. They did go out and get Orlando Franklin. That was to fill a perpetual weakness at left guard since Chris Steelman's been there. But overall, this is not a super expensive offensive line. And that's another thing you need to consider when you look at the guaranteed money that Rivers gets is the team's also saving money on the line because of what you just talked about, Robert, the ownership that this guy takes with his front five.
Yeah. So speaking of money, and I know we talked a little bit about Eli Manning, the quarterback and the Giants are reportedly, quote-unquote, significantly apart in contract talks. This is something we hear often in contract talks. I said what I would be willing to pay Eli Manning. But would you be willing to put him over Aaron Rodgers in terms of salary?
Well, if you're asking me, I'm pretending I'm Jerry Reese.
You're Jerry
Reese.
The
GM.
You guys don't look anything alike, by the way.
No, I know. That's the first thing I noticed about the guy and myself, actually. If I'm Jerry Reese or I'm Tom Coughlin, who probably has a say in this as well, my answer is yes, I pay him because what are we going to do? What are you going to – let's just answer this. What are you going to do if you're the Giants? You're probably going to go – let's say you don't have Eli Manning. Let's say you play him one more year and then he's gone. You probably win about 9-7 with him this year. Let's, you know, maybe a little better, maybe a little worse. Whatever it is, you're not drafting in the top 10. So it's this quarterback purgatory that we talked about with the Bills last week. If you just let Eli Manning walk away, what are you going to do if you're the Giants? You've got Odell Beckham, you got Ruben Randall, Victor Cruz. You just drafted a left tackle in the first round. You've invested a little bit in your running game. You signed Shane Vereen. Are you really just going to go out and find a new quarterback and build around a second or third round pick, which is probably what would happen? So you either pay Eli Manning or you give up a bunch of draft picks to go draft a guy and then hope that he can learn a complicated offense under Ben McAdoo and then hope that you all aren't fired by the time it actually comes to fruition. You pay Eli Manning because the Giants are in a win now kind of mode. And for an extra $2 or $3 million a year, everyone's jobs get protected.
Yeah. Speaking of contract news, there's one more we got to get to. T.Y. Hilton signs a 5-year, $65 million deal with $28 million guaranteed with the Colts. This was the contract that inevitably had to come after Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas got their big deals that kind of set the quarterback market, because I think though T.Y. Hilton has, for all intents and purposes, matched those guys in production over the last couple years, he is not the all-around wide receiver that they are. Did you think that that was a fair investment for Ryan Grigson to make?
Yeah, I do. It's unusual for Grigson because the Colts typically don't sign guys before their contracts expire, but I think they got a pretty good deal on T.Y. Hilton. It's $28 million guaranteed, and that's not fully guaranteed as I understand it. It's guaranteed against injury. So it's a lower risk contract for the Colts and a long-term deal to get a wide receiver who's become very important in their offense. You know, Dez Bryant got $45 million guaranteed. T.Y. Hilton's not Dez Bryant, but he's not 28 out of 45 of what Dez Bryant is, if you get what I'm saying.
That's a good way to put it. I wonder what that fraction is broken down.
It's 28/45.
Well, I mean, broken down to lower numbers.
Well, it would be, can you break, it'd be like 7, I don't know, it's like 4 out of 6.5.
Right.
4 over 6.5, so 2 over 3.25.
Yeah, he isn't that.
He's not two-thirds of Dez Bryant. I mean, he's more than that. And you put him in there with Philip Dorsett. See, I think they drafted Dorsett with the intention of pairing him long-term with Hilton and Moncrief. I think if they didn't have – this sounds backwards, but I think if they didn't have both Hilton and Moncrief, they maybe wouldn't have taken Dorsett. Because now we're talking about they would have built in a different direction. But now you get a chance to put Dorsett in there, and as Peter talked about, I think on last week's podcast it was, it's the first time we've seen this much documented speed, like what, 4.38 40 times or something like that? Three guys across the board with sub 4.5 40 times, all lining up together for the foreseeable future. For Moncrief's early in his rookie contract, Dorsett obviously the same. Andrew Luck has three burners for the next at least four seasons.
Yeah, and the guy I don't want you to forget about, and I don't know if he's on your radar, but Daron Carter, probably the fifth guy in that rotation behind Andre Johnson, T.Y. Hilton, Philip Dorsett, Dante Moncrief. You got Daron Carter, Chris Carter's son, who I actually saw live in a Montreal Alouettes game, and he killed it. I mean, he was the most dominant player on the field in the CFL. Didn't have the work habits that I think that the NFL likes to see, which is why he ended up in the CFL. But he goes and tries out in Indianapolis, runs like a 4.7 40 or something like that. They still sign him just because he's got ridiculous ball skills. I'm intrigued by how he kind of fits into that rotation there.
I think he fits in the rotation for two more weeks, and then he watches Griff Whalen from home.
You think he gets cut?
Well, I mean, why would what you just described to me, why would you keep a guy like that if you've got Griff Whalen, who overachieves, who's played with Andrew Luck before and who's come up not big for you in big moments, but has played significant snaps late in the season? Why would you sign him over Griff Whalen, or why would you sign him over Vincent Brown, who still has a trickle of upside?
Well, Andy, I'm just talking. I only know how he behaved in college and at Montreal. People change.
Well, but the NFL doesn't have time to sit around and wait for people to change.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I don't mean to like be harsh on the guy, and his dad obviously had a wonderful career, and his dad's a great embodiment of how people can change. But I mean, come on, Klemko, we're talking about a bottom of the roster type of guy right here.
All right, let's make a small wager that Daron Carter makes the roster. What do you want to bet on it?
How about I will bet you $1, which is the entry fee for FanDuel.
This is such like a good that? Segue.
Yeah, and FanDuel, it's our new sponsor. It's the leader in one-week fantasy football. So this is the new wave of fantasy football. It's no more of this drafting your team and being stuck with the same mediocre guys for the entire season. Each week is a new week in this FanDuel fantasy football. They will pay out over $75 million a week this football season. And entry fee, as I said, is just $1. NFL Week 1 games are already live on FanDuel Lobby, so you don't have to wait another day to start building your teams. And over 1 million players have already won money playing the fantasy sports on FanDuel. So go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use the code, there it is again, MMQB, and sign up now. And lastly, real quick, there's a special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. So that's a bonus of up to $200. Now, the offer is only good for the first 50 people who use the promo code MMQB. So don't get left out. Get in there. Get on FanDuel.com. That's FanDuel.com. And use the promo code MMQB.
Woo!
Robert, you've been in Kansas City recently, correct?
That's right. I was I was there today, and I am going back Friday for the preseason game.
And that's in Kansas City, the preseason game?
Yes.
Okay, we did that last year. They played the Bengals. It was like their first game. And Arrowhead, I went down on the field at the end because they let you do that in Kansas City. Even when it was emptied out, I could kind of feel like a sense of noise at Arrowhead. I would love to do that at the end of a close game, you know, an AFC West divisional night game or something like that.
Well, the only team that I've ever been to that has a better home field advantage in terms of noise is the team they're actually playing in this game, which is the Seahawks.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So what do you want to what did you see at Chiefs camp today? I know you had some stuff you wanted to hit on with this team. To me, they're a fascinating team.
Yeah. Well, it was a walkthrough, so no big takeaways from what I actually saw, but you do get to see the guys out there and kind of talk with some of the beat guys about their thoughts on the roster. Derek Johnson and Mike DeVito coming back from injury to a defense that was pretty great without them, didn't allow a 300-yard passer all year, and they played Phil Rivers twice, Eli Manning twice, Tom Brady once, and Tannehill when he was pretty hot. So that's pretty impressive. And now you're mostly healthy, although Dontari Poe now reportedly will miss the beginning of the season. The big question to me, as it is with every NFL team, is can you win a Super Bowl with the quarterback? And with Kansas City, I lean towards no, but I would like to hear, and I'm sure the listeners would like to hear what you think.
I think in a vacuum with Alex Smith, the answer is no, but Kansas City does an exceptional job. Andy Reid and his staff do an exceptional job of building the right type of offense around Smith. And so what do we mean by that? For one, the reason Kansas City hasn't gone out and signed a bunch of wide receivers, I know they signed Macklin this year, but last year they had a great need at that position. They did not address it at all. I think the reason they feel comfortable dealing with middle-tier wide receivers, to put it politely, is they are a two-receiver offense. They're not a three-wide receiver offense like most teams are. And so when you stay in two wide receivers, the defense stays in its base personnel package. And you get a more predictable defense when that happens. So Alex Smith, who's a very smart human being, a smart guy, but I don't think he's necessarily a smart quarterback. He doesn't play with an intelligent gunslinger mentality. He's very cautious. It might be that he's too smart for his own good. I think he processes everything, and I mean everything. So when you got a guy like that that doesn't necessarily pull the trigger into tight windows and doesn't quite have the arm to do it anyway, if you can simplify the defense for him and define the reads and know that he's going to put the ball in the right position wherever the defined read is, then I think you're in good shape. And they do a wonderful job of that with Alex Smith. They have a lot of good zone beater route combinations. They involve their running backs and their tight ends in the passing game. And so this is an offense that can create mismatches without needing to be too dynamic at wide receiver. If they had an Andrew Luck at QB, I think they'd go out and they'd do what the Colts have done and get some burning wide receivers and guys that can win streaking down the field. But they've got guys that win through system and execution. And if that's the way you play, Alex Smith can be fine at quarterback for you.
I agree to an extent. I think that once you get deep in the AFC playoffs and you're playing the Patriots or you're playing what we think the Colts might end up being, I think you're going to need to break out that slot receiver, those 3 and 4 receiver sets to kind of throw the team, the other guys off balance. And if you don't really have that in your repertoire, I don't think Alex Smith is winning a Foxborough in January shootout with Tom Brady. I just could never see it.
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree. As my good friend Greg Cosell always says, it will be 3rd and long at some point in every NFL game.
Right.
And what happens in those 3rd and longs often determines what happens on the scoreboard and in the final outcome. And on 3rd and long, you can't scheme plays the same way. You're getting that nickel or dime defense. You have to go 3 wide. You have to drop back. That gets into the limitations of Alex Smith. The Chiefs had a lot of unusually close games last year, too, if I recall. The other thing that happens when you play the way they do is the games do tend to be a little bit artificially close because of just the nature of it. When you mount drives and you base it on strictly execution, you're not going to have quite as many explosive plays, I don't think. So I agree with you. I think we're on the same page about what Alex Smith is and where the Chiefs can take him. The question is, if you put him opposite a really good defense, and I'm not saying this is a really good defense, because I think without Don Terry Poe, it's a different story. But let's say the Chiefs statistically are as good against the pass this year as they have been. Their run defense was a problem last year. But let's say it's a good enough defense. What does that do to the equation? If Alex Smith were theoretically playing with a top 5 defense, do you think then it's a different story? Do you think you can get past, say, the divisional round?
Well, I disagree with you with the assertion that it won't be a top 5 defense. I think it still will be. Poe, with the herniated disc, will not be out when things really start to heat up week 5, week 6, week 7. I mean, he's expected to be back.
Robert, things heat up week 1. Week 1, the games count in week 1, 2, and 3, and 4 as much as they count in weeks 11 and 12.
I understand that, but I don't think you're going to look back on week 17 and say, oh, wow, this Kansas City Chiefs defense really could have been something if Don Terry Poe hadn't missed the first couple weeks. You're not going to say that.
See, I think you will. I think you will say that because the Chiefs are a dime defense. They play a lot of small guys. They play safeties instead of linebackers. So they're going to keep Derek Johnson on the field. They'll bring in Eric Berry off the bench initially. Maybe he'll start, whatever. You're going to get good reps out of Eric Berry, Hussein Abdullah, Ron Parker, Tyvon Branch. They've got safeties to use. But the only way you can play safeties and still hold up against the run respectably is if you've got a nose tackle, or in this case, he'd be more of a three technique, a nose shade, whatever it is. You have to have a monster along the interior part of the defensive line if you're going to be small at the second level. And I think if they don't have Poe in there, then they have to change some of their main defensive packages. You know, I'm the guy as well, though, that thought this was a very good run defense last year on film. And then when I go and look at the numbers, I see them as like the 28th, I think it was, something like that. Did anyone talk about that in Kansas City with you? Because I can't understand for the life of me how they were so bad against the run. And they didn't give up a lot of big run plays either. They got just gradually mauled over. Fans have blamed Josh Maga, linebacker. I'm telling you, Josh Maga had an excellent season last year. He flashed every single week. He could not have been the problem. Is it? Did anyone talk about the run defense in Kansas City? Maybe it's the Mike DeVito being gone a year ago.
Well, now that I'm looking at the Chiefs' schedule, I think you make a great point about not having Poe. If you look at some of the first, I guess, five running backs they're going to face. Oh wow, six, seven running backs they're going to face. The Texans, Alfred Blue, not a big deal. C.J. Anderson with the Broncos, pretty big deal. Then you get Eddie Lacy at the Packers, the combination of Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard at the Bengals in week four, Matt Forte at home against, with Chicago, and then Adrian Peterson in Minnesota for week six, and then Le'Veon Bell week seven at home. So those are five or six running backs who can really tear you up. I'm starting to think differently about that Poe assertion I had.
Well, Jay Howard played well for them last year, defensive end, but that's a different story playing. I assume that's who's going to be playing nose tackle once these games count. I don't know who's been at nose tackle in camp. Maybe you saw that, but
yeah, that's who's in
is
there.
Is it Jay
now.
Howard?
He's in the first team now.
Yeah, and you know, he's 300 pounds. He doesn't have Poe's size. He doesn't have his suddenness, but he did a good job taking on blocks a year ago. So maybe they can tread water, and then I do think they lose their dime package with Poe out of the lineup, but losing your dime means you just play nickel instead, so they keep another linebacker on the field. I just pumped up Josh Maga. Derek Johnson, if he's healthy, and that's a big if, you know, he's coming off, an Achilles, right?
Right.
So, if he's healthy, then they're still athletic enough. Johnson moves as well as a stiffer safety would move, and that's a compliment to a linebacker, so maybe they're okay. The other thing we need to consider, Robert, is they're going to bring some heat in Kansas City. It's important they stop the run because this is a team built to win on third and long. Not only did they re-sign Justin Houston for top-of-the-market money, but they drafted Dee Ford a year ago as a pass rusher. He hasn't proven to be a big contributor yet, but they also used a first-round pick this year on Marcus Peters at cornerback and a third-rounder on Steven Nelson. So they want man-to-man corners there, and when you go with man-to-man corners, it means you're going to be dialing up a lot of blitzes. Every blitz, almost every blitz, involves man coverage on the back end. And Bob Sutton, their D coordinator, has been one of the best in the league at constructing blitz designs, especially out of those nickel and dime packages, which is where most blitzes come from. So it's they're always a fun defense to watch. I know 2 or 3 years ago, they were at the absolute cutting edge of dime defense in the NFL.
Yeah. It's interesting you mention the two defensive backs that they picked in the first and third round. I thought that they would go front seven with those picks, and I was especially surprised that they would go with a guy like Peters, who was a question mark as a first rounder, when you consider that he was the best player at the University of Washington and somehow got kicked off the football team. I mean, that doesn't happen a lot around the NCAA. There's got to be a lot going on with that guy. The word is, you know, they bring in the new coaching staff. He doesn't, want to conform to what's a more disciplinarian approach than the predecessor, and he's out of there. But I think there's a little bit more to it than that. Very interested to see how he kind of matures in the NFL, and whether or not he's able to overtake Sean Smith and Philip Gaines and eventually start at corner this season.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see that. My guess is he will not, because I think Sean Smith's a guaranteed starter when he's in there, when he's not suspended for driving drunk like an idiot. But I think Philip Gaines is I don't want to quite call him a rising star, But he was very, very good when he was cast into the lineup last season, especially in the slot. But I think Gaines can start on the outside, kick inside a nickel, and Peters maybe becomes your nickelback. Jamel Fleming didn't have a bad year either. So let's put it this way. This whole secondary, look at Ron Parker. He's a former corner now playing safety. Hussein Abdullah plays linebacker in the dime. They've got options in this secondary. They've got guys that can play inside as corners or nickel slots. They've got guys that can...
You haven't even mentioned Eric Berry.
Well, we haven't elaborated on him. Yeah, he's their best player. You know, if he's what he was before, and I hope he is, and I know they weren't necessarily thinking he was going to be back this year either with what he went through and the cancer treatment. So already that's a plus year for him this season. But if he can regain most of what he was before, that's a huge dynamic piece because he's a second Hussein Abdullah, or really I guess Abdullah would be a second Eric Berry at this point. Yeah. Guys that can play in the box, excellent blitzers, good run defenders. Maybe Eric Berry in his absence last year, that was a big part of the run defense tailing off too, perhaps. Versatile guys that can tackle in space and also cover tight ends.
I'll say one more thing about Kansas City, and then I will ask you for a gut feeling on a prediction, even though I know you hate doing that. I had a conversation with John Dorsey today, their GM, the former Green Bay Packers front office man, and he talked a little bit about how this team watching Eric Berry come back from the Hodgkin lymphoma and just going about his business, putting trust in the process and working his way back without saying anything, without making a peep in the media, just showing back up in the locker room. I mean, DeAnthony Thomas told me today that he didn't know Eric Berry was coming back or was even on track to come back until he looked over and saw number 29 at his locker.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Can you imagine the way that must galvanize a locker room?
Oh,
too?
My God. That's like a movie. I mean, it's like a movie.
Yeah. That's great to hear. I got to meet Eric Berry last year. He was the one chief the guy I requested at the top of my list to meet with when we went through Kansas City on the tour last year. And it was an excellent football conversation, a smart football. You know, you can tell, you can just tell talking to these guys who understands the game and thinks the game, and then who are the athletes that get told what to do. And he's one of these guys who really thinks the game, and I talked to him for a few minutes, but he seems to have a humility about him as well.
Right. And what I was going to say about Dorsey is that he really believes that this team has a sense of purpose now that has been bolstered by Eric returning, and whether or not Eric is able to contribute a bunch, just him being in the room kind of increases the sense of urgency for these guys. I think that there is a small chance that they finally beat Denver and overtake the AFC West, though gun to my head when we're making picks for the season preview, I'm still going to pick Denver. What do you think?
I probably pick Denver as well.
You say it like it's some great tragedy.
Well, because I don't think Denver's the team they were a year ago, but I don't know if that means they're not going to still win. I'm reluctant to pick against Peyton Manning. That's what it is. And we have to keep in mind Denver's defense is probably more – it is more talented than Kansas City's defense. So Denver, quarterback to quarterback, Denver beats Kansas City, and I think defense to defense, they edge Kansas City as well. They've also got more receiving weapons. So explain to me why you wouldn't pick Denver, actually.
Yeah.
Even though I would say Denver's probably like an 11-5 caliber team and Kansas City's a 10-6 team, Denver just feels firmly better than Kansas City the more I compare and contrast them.
Well, if it comes down to those two meetings between the two teams, I mean, Denver certainly has the edge.
Yeah, and Denver controlled both meetings last year, although Kansas City's given them a good battle in the recent years. The problem is, I mean, I know we're going to get to RG3 here and Chris Johnson in a minute, but the problem is Kansas City is you can't blitz Peyton Manning the same way you blitz everybody else. And so Kansas City has to play more coverage concepts against them, and they're not at their best when they're in straight coverage concepts. Manning does a good job of finding your weak link somewhere.
Yeah. Before we get to those last two topics, a quick word about SeatGeek. From the NFL's Week 1 to Super Bowl 50 in Santa Clara, there's nothing like seeing the action up close. If you've never made it to a game in person, you should make it this year with our new sponsor, SeatGeek. I mean, With their new app, and I actually took a look at this the other day, it's easy to find a great deal, pay for tickets, and get to your seat with a few taps of your phone. For the listeners to this show, the promo code MMQB in the SeatGeek app gets you a $20 rebate off your first purchase. It takes less than a minute to download, and the app is free on iPhone and Google Play stores. They have a great feature called Deal Score. It ranks every ticket on the market with a 1 to 100 value score and plots the best deals on a color-coded interactive map of the venue. And then lastly, their mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless. If you decide to catch a game with your friends at the last minute, you don't want to deal with these scalpers. You can store your credit card on SeatGeek, and once you find one you want to buy, you complete the purchase with just a couple taps. With the MMQB promo code, you get $20 once you've made your first purchase. And yeah, SeatGeek, very happy to have them as a new sponsor to the podcast. Now, we wanted to get into, before we wrapped up the show, Robert Griffin had certainly the quote of the week, probably the quote of the month. It's been twisted and interpreted 10 different ways. I'll read it here. He told the local DC station WJLA on Monday, "I don't feel like I have to come out here and show anybody anything or why I'm better than this guy or better than that guy. It's more about going and affirming that for me. I go out and I play. I know I'm the best quarterback on the team," Griffin told WJLA. He continues, "I feel like I'm the best quarterback in the league, and I have to go out and show that." Now, immediately, ESPN, probably SI.com, probably every site that covers the NFL on an aggregator basis, took those few words out of context. "I feel like I'm the best quarterback in the league," and ran with it. To me, it kind of spoke to the sad state of sports journalism now, where somebody writes a good in-depth story with a good interview that is very nuanced, and then everybody else takes one line out of that and monetizes it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, who cares what RG3 thinks about where he ranks in the league? For one, he doesn't study the other 31 quarterbacks in depth to know where he compares to them. That's one. For two, we all know it's not true if we want to really, get down to the nitty gritty of it. And for three, it doesn't matter that it's not true, because what he's saying and the general spirit of the sentiment is correct. He feels like he's the best, or he feels he's his best, and he's got to go out and do his job each and every day. So, I feel bad because I always wind up ripping on RG3, and I don't mean to do that. I really don't. But he thinks higher of his game than I do, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the guy has started half the games that his team has played over the last 2 years, probably less than that. He's got about 20 picks and I think 18 interceptions in that time. Obviously, Robert's not trying to sit there and say, "I'm the best quarterback in the NFL." He's saying, "I feel like I can be that player. I feel like I am that player, and I just have to manifest that." If I'm a Redskins fan, I just, I'm saying, "Hey, Robert, maybe don't talk about it, be about it." But I hate that these things get taken so far out of context, especially during dead news times like this.
Well, you think, training camp, that's a dead news time?
Well, compared to, week one.
The part that I would take umbrage with, if we're going to dissect this, is him saying he's the best quarterback on that team. And I get why he says that and has to.
Can we please not talk about Colt McCoy today? I just don't want to do it.
I'm not pumping up Colt McCoy, but if I were starting, if I had to decide who I'm starting and I'm Jay Gruden, I'm starting Colt McCoy with little doubt in my mind. Oh, I've offended you.
I just don't want to have a conversation about Washington's backup quarterbacks right now.
I'm not talking about the back. I'm talking about the third stringer, Robert. Third string. The reason I think Colt McCoy works in this offense. No, I have to explain it real quick now.
All right.
What you can't, you talked about Griffin's stats. What you can't see are the throws Griffin doesn't make, doesn't attempt, doesn't see. And there were a vast number of them every single week last week when he was under center. With Colt McCoy, at least you don't have that element. You can run the full scale of the offense. Now, there are throws he can't make, but at least you know the play designs will be carried out the way they were designed to be carried out. And if you're the other 10 guys on offense, you prefer that over a willy-nilly playmaker who doesn't make plays anymore.
Are you done?
Yeah. Now we want to talk Chris Johnson. Is that what we're going to end on?
We're going to end on Chris Johnson because it relates to a story that I wrote 4 weeks ago about Jay Glazer. You remember that one? That was a gem.
That was well, a gem or a gem?
A gem.
Like a G-E-M? Because it was also about a G-Y-M.
Yeah, it was a G-E-M. It was a good one, I think.
Okay, so more self-congratulations. Well, yeah, I remember about
I'm
it.
Trying to
you
find...
You know how I remember? Because you brought it up every single week after that for the next 2 weeks. So this is 3 out of 5 podcasts that Robert Klemko, at his own behest, has brought up the Jay Glazer gym story. And now you got to tell your Chris Johnson bit about it.
It's a gag, Andy. Okay, I'm not that pressed about it. No, Chris Johnson gets signed by the Cardinals, and that's super cool because he got shot in the shoulder in March. Can you imagine getting shot and then, you know, coming back to the NFL as a mediocre aging running back?
I can't imagine any part of that sentence. I can't imagine getting shot. I can't imagine being in the NFL. I can't certainly imagine being mediocre at anything. So it's quite impressive what he's doing. He signed for the veteran minimum, which tells you that the league didn't have a lot of confidence in him. But he gets does he have an opt-out after this year? It's a 2-year deal, isn't it?
I'm actually not sure.
Or no, it's not a 2-year deal. It's a 1-year deal. That's right. The veteran, it's worth up to $2 million, is what I was thinking. But he's got to get 1,300 yards rushing for that. So Chris Johnson signs for the veteran minimum at 1 year. He's in a prove it deal. It's a smart move by him to, you know, it's his only move because he's signing for the minimum. But he's got to show that he's got something left, so to speak. And he joins an offense that I think will have a place for him. I think Andre Ellington's the best back in that offense, but. You know, David Johnson, their rookie's been hurt, and they don't have a lot of depth at the position. So he'll get some meaningful carries at least.
I agree. I think Andre Ellington, while he showed flashes of probably being an every down back, I don't think that they will risk that. I think that they are looking for somebody clearly. I mean, they drafted a running back high to compete and kind of be a committee guy with him. But I think they're looking for a 2- or 3-pronged attack there. And hopefully, because I think Chris Johnson is a pretty nice guy from everything that I know about him and when I've met him. So
tell your gym story again. Well, you're working clearly working it in there. Let's do it, and then we can sign off.
Hopefully, Chris Johnson makes that team and makes them better because I would like to see a little bit of competition in the NFC West now that the 49ers are completely irrelevant.
Oh, geez. All right. That's fine. What's interesting is David Johnson, by the way, 6'1", 225, and Chris Johnson, 5'11", 190. So they drafted a guy to be one type of runner, I'm guessing, which would be an inside runner. And now they've got a guy that's not Chris Johnson's game. So it's an interesting signing in that regard. They also lost Mikey Potty recently to an injury. So they're going to have to, it'll be around October when they get their running game going. Well, hey, that's all we got for the MMQB podcast on the Slate Panoply Network. We appreciate you listening. You can tweet Robert Klemko at Robert Klemko or myself at @Andy_Benoit. Use the hashtag MMQB podcast. Tell us what you like and what you don't like. And subscribe on iTunes. It'll be in your inbox every Thursday morning. For Robert Klemko, I'm Andy Benoit. Thanks for listening to the MMQB podcast.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.